This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Braintree Payments. Mobile app development can be complex, but integrating your payments no longer has to be. With Braintree, your business can accept nearly every type of payment from any device with just one integration. Learn more at BraintreePayments.com/WhatTheTech. And by Harry's, for guys like you who want a great shave experience at a fraction of what you're paying. Go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code WhatTheTech when you check out.
What the Tech?
Hey, everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian, and this is not getting any better.
Good Lord, Andrew. let me handle this.
Yeah, you do it, Paul.
That was terrible. No, I'm not even sure what to say.
I lost my voice. It was wrestling week here in New York. SummerSlam was in New York, and I did not notice how bad it was until I came to the studio and I had to do some recordings, and I sound terrible.
Yep. Yeah, you do.
I was screaming at the top of my lungs. I'm thinking I've gone to a bunch of concerts, and you go to concerts and stuff, and you're speaking all day, just like some event. You're going to a baseball game, football game. You're yelling. I've lost my voice before. I cannot believe that I'm still 3 days later. I still have no voice. Maybe this is it. Maybe I damaged something and I'm done. This is what I will sound like for the rest of my life.
Oh, you'll be fine.
How you doing, Paul?
A few days off. I'm doing well.
You're doing
How do I say this? I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Are you relaxed at this point? Are you back to normal?
I'm back to normal, which means I'm not necessarily relaxed, although I should be. It's just a bunch of stuff going on. But yeah.
Talking about a bunch of stuff. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today. I have something here. Let me see if I could go to it. This is what they call a teaser.
Yep.
I am going to be finally reviewing.
Andrew, that's what they call an iPad.
Oh, that's a very good. Is it an iPad?
Isn't it an iPad?
We have an iPad here and maybe an iPad here. I'm going to tell you what this is, and it's a very interesting device. So I'm going to review this for you guys finally after using it for about a month and a half regularly. So I'm going to give you guys a really fair and honest review of this because you don't really get a chance to really learn about the product after about 3 days of using it and putting out a YouTube video to get the hits. I don't really do that. So I follow the Paul way, actually. You do that. You do long-term testing on stuff. You put your initial impression of a device, and then you actually do a review like a couple weeks later.
Yep.
Man, what a thought to do a review that way. So we're going to do that. We're going to talk about a couple other things. But before we do, Paul, I want to talk about our sponsor, and that's Braintree. I've been talking about Braintree for months now, and every time I do, I get an email from one of you guys telling me that you have implemented Braintree in your mobile app. Whether you're a business owner or you're a developer, if you're a business owner, tell your developer. If you're the developer, tell the business owner, because this is something that you guys want to do. Why make payment integration more difficult than it has to be? And I have a bunch of friends. One of them has a very successful clothing company, and every time they decide to they wouldn't accept American Express and they didn't accept Apple Pay. And when it came time for them to start implementing these, payment methods, it was a disaster for them. They had to literally start over and find a different developer to code in a different language. It was very difficult. With Braintree, it's super, super easy. So whether you're using Java, Ruby, Python, it doesn't matter. Their SDK is available for a long range of service side and client side availabilities. So some of the payment methods that they accept is Apple Pay, Bitcoin, all major credit cards, all different types of currency. The Braintree code supports Android, iOS, and JavaScript clients, the SDKs in many languages. It's a very elegant piece of code and very easy to understand. I believe it's only a couple lines of code. It's simple and it's secure and it's code you could integrate quickly. You have no downtime here with doing this. To learn more about Braintree, go to BraintreePayments.com/WhatTheTech. That's braintreepayments.com/whatthetech to learn more. I want to thank Braintree for supporting the show and, of course, for supporting the GFQ network. Paul.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about...
Where
do I begin? Let's talk about the Skype issue, because we lived through this.
Oh, we, I think we pioneered it.
Yeah.
You know? Yes.
We you know what's possible? We are probably one of the first ones to discover it.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Right. Yeah, sure.
Because you are a part of the Insider program.
I've blown away so many builds of Windows 10 because of this without understanding what was causing the problem. You know, and you may recall at different points, I thought I had the solution and, you know, I switched. I thought it was Skylake at first because all the computers I was having the problems on were Skylake. I switched to a 3-gen old processor, yeah. Same exact problem.
Yeah.
I did not. For some reason, I never tied it to the anniversary update, but that's.
You know, I'm embarrassed to say I didn't tie it either. And yeah. It was at a point that Paul and I actually, on my wall, in my office, we had like that map. Like that conspiracy map going with pictures of processors and Microsoft and build numbers. And we're trying to map this out and we totally failed at it. And Skype has not been working properly for, I guess, since the time that this came out. And it was very inconsistent in the fact that you would install an anniversary update and it would work sometimes and then it would stop working.
Right.
What is the exact problem? To kind of explain this to everybody, because
what is the exact problem?
Yeah, because everybody is affected by this. If you have a current webcam that uses H.264 or does it on board, you will experience a problem if you're using Skype.
And not just Skype, right? It's other applications that use this kind of encoding. It's basically the micro. You know, there was a problem with Skype in particular. Having issues, and Microsoft basically just turned off support for a codec, right, for MPEG 4 H.264 codecs, right?
Yeah.
Just turn it off. Right? And it means they're only allowed to use what's the other one called? The other kind of encoding.
They killed MPEG 4.
Well, they killed MPEG 4, but they are allowing some, like Y2Y or YUY2 or whatever.
Yeah.
That causes Skype to freeze. They never.
Why you? I think.
Well, they never. I mean, like, it's amazing that this impacts a Microsoft program, and this somehow was never figured out. Like, nobody ever figured this out. And again, it's not just Skype. Like, I guess a guy from the Windows camera team actually started talking about it in an online support thread, but Skype is the one where, you know, people really notice it. I've had this problem with my podcast, multiple machines. You'll recall the shows where I've had to we've had shows where we didn't have video.
No, nothing.
Because video would freeze. We couldn't force it down to 720p. We remember in the beginning we thought, well, it always happened at the switch over to 1080p. And so of course we tied it to that event for some reason.
Yeah. And it makes sense because that's when the device starts doing the encoding on the device.
Okay. Yeah.
When it goes to 1080.
Yeah. So, I sort of through trial and error and lots of error, figured out my own workaround, which was simply, when you install Windows 10 anew, which I do all the time, you just never install the Logitech software. I should say too, we never really said this, this impacts the Logitech C920, right? So that's the correct name of that.
Yeah.
It's the one I use. It's the one virtually everyone uses. It's the classic. It's the highest quality, the best, you know, value webcam today, 1080p. And they they broke it. So anyway, my workaround was never install the Logitech software,
okay,
which so, seems innocuous enough.
Okay. So here's my issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
What is the software? I don't think it's the software doing anything. I think it's anniversary update. Like the software is not changing anything.
Except that every time I install the software, that's when I have the problem. So here's what people do, right? You're using Windows 10. It doesn't matter what version of it is, right? You have this Logitech camera plugged into it. You install Windows 10. Windows 10 recognizes the camera, doesn't say anything about it. It just works. And you get about your day. You install other applications. Things happen. Days go by. Whatever. And then one day you get a little pop-up notification. It's in Action Center and it says, hey, you should finish installing your software. It's the type of thing you would see for mice back in the day if you had a Microsoft mouse, although yeah. we don't see that anymore. You know, keyboards. And you see it for this camera. And, you know, it's the Logitech software doesn't really seem to do much. You can go in and tweak things like, you know, the white levels and the brightness and the color cast, and you can reverse the video and that kind of stuff. But I think the basic, I think that stuff, actually I should just go look and I can tell you, but I think the basics are all kind of in there. Like, I think it just does it. So when I go to webcam settings, yeah, I actually do get the Logitech software. Like, so the Logitech software is automatically installed. It's just that at some point it wants to do the thing where it says, hey, we should check for a new version. And I just say no. Even though if you own one of these cameras, you know the drill. Like, you say, check for a new version. It says no new version has been found. And then nothing ever happens ever again, ever, except the camera stops working. So all I'm saying is Raphael has figured out a fix, and he's a genius in this way.
He really is. No, seriously.
Yeah. He's a savant when it comes to this. You know, and he had – I wish I could get this exactly right, but he had said something on Twitter like, look – every time they make a change like this, you can find it, you know, and he did. And you change the setting in the registry in this case, and it fixes the problem. So I guess what I'm saying is I have never had this problem since I stopped explicitly installing the Logitech software. Right now, I'm using it on an anniversary update machine that was on RTM that is now on an Insider build, my Surface Pro, Surface Book rather. The tower I had the problem on. All of these computers all now work. There's no problems. I've never had to do this thing. But if you're experiencing this freezing issue, which will happen, I think, when you install that software. I mean, I'm not saying it is the literal cause, but whatever change occurs at that point, I don't know. There's a workaround now. And you can. It's just a simple switch in the registry.
Could it possibly also be the way that you install the anniversary update?
Nope.
let me tell you why.
Okay.
Because I've done the testing here, and it's been inconsistent for me also, where one machine, which has the Logitech software and everything on there, is fine. Okay. The other machine that I did a totally clean install. I mean, I did, you know, I installed Windows and then I went to like wipe everything off and then start over. I did that, and then I installed the Logitech software and it froze. I have a theory because I've noticed that there's inconsistency with Windows 10 where if you like people that have some driver issues, if you have the driver prior to installing Windows 10, you're not going to encounter these problems. But if you go to install it clean.
Well, so on all these machines, I already had Windows 10, right? I was never coming from a different version of Windows. I was coming from previous version of Windows 10. But you'll remember this, and I really do think it's tied to this. Well, I know it is because it works fine for me. So all I can say is I have changed the way I handle this Logitech thing, and it always works. I don't need this workaround. So you'll remember from the past, back when you know they were putting out two or three builds. Well, they were putting out at least one build a week, sometimes two builds. You know, I'm upgrading as we go and whatever, and I'm, you know, I'd have a problem. So we'd have the freezing problem. One week it was so bad, again, we had to do the show audio only from my end. And the next day, I wiped out my computer, and the video worked fine for a couple of days, right? And it's like, what is the thing that happens between the time you install it when everything's fine and that time, 3-5 days down the road, where all of a sudden you go to a podcast and it doesn't work? And the thing that changes, and this is just true across the board, is at some point among your notifications, it will say, finish installing your software. And you do it in sort of a knee-jerk sense. You sort of even don't notice you're like, yeah, sure. And then it says, oh, there were no updates. Everyone who has this camera has seen the exact dialogue I'm talking about.
You're talking about within the Logitech software, or you're talking about within Windows?
It's within Windows, but it loads a Logitech.
The installer, yeah.
And that's what does it. Yeah. I'm positive of it. I'm not saying the problem isn't Windows 10. We know it is, right? But there's something about if you just use the base camera with the whatever the default driver is, this will never happen. It doesn't on any of my computers. I've replicated this on multiple PCs.
So do you think when you override the driver, when you install over the driver? Because that was my initial theory, that it's doing something when you install.
I don't install anything. That's the point. I just don't do it. Yeah. If I don't do it, it's fine. And literally the computer we're using right now, you just commented on how good it looks. I've not done Raphael's workaround. I've just never installed the Logitech software. It works fine.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And I had multiple problems on this exact computer before.
I'm curious as to how many other people have this problem.
Millions.
Millions of people. Millions. You know what was the most fascinating thing? The response from Microsoft in that forum where
I didn't see that. What did they say?
It was kind of, from what I initially read early on, it was they were defending it until they realized that it's a major Skype problem. Where they were saying, like, well, it's the developer's job to kind of fix this.
Nice. Well, here's my takeaway from this. And, we've often talked about Microsoft's desire to turn Windows into a platform like iOS or Android, where it's updated constantly. It can be updated at any time. And to get users used to that and to kind of tout the benefits of that, which are very real, right? But as anyone who has updated Windows knows, there are also problems that creep in when you just update something this complex. And for this kind of contract to work, we have to be able to trust Microsoft software updates, right? And part of the way that we can feel a little bit better about it, I would assume, is that we know that Microsoft is testing Windows 10 publicly, releasing builds just about every week. They're already back on the bandwagon doing it again. It's going out to millions of people. It's being tested in the open. Surely, this most tested version of Windows ever will be the most reliable, the most stable ever created. And yet, this thing goes out and it whacks the only webcam everyone is using, other than the ones that are built into laptops. And it impacts millions of people.
So
and
where
we didn't catch it.
Is? Where do you think the problem is with that?
Because I don't know. This is the, I don't know. I mean, I participate in the Windows Insider program. I run these pre-release builds. I had this problem. I never drew the connection, right? The first thing I saw, it's almost like a psychological case study. You say, here are the parameters. This is what happens. What's the first thing that goes through your head? And I swear to God, the first thing that went through my head was Skylake.
I thought the same thing. I thought your motherboard.
Reaction.
Yeah.
Right?
I thought your motherboard.
Skylake. And sure enough, it happens on Skylake PCs. And then I think, well, I'll go back. I literally dug my old tower out of the basement. My son had used it briefly to see if he could turn it into a gaming PC before we built him one. So it was just sitting there in the corner. I actually pulled that thing out. Yeah, actually, you remember this. I took it apart.
Yeah.
I cleaned all the parts with water, remember?
Yeah.
Specifically because I wanted to test Skype, right, on a non-Skylake system and see if it just worked. Now, by the way, when you find out it's not Skylake, right? What's the next thing you blame right away? Instantly, because it's everything that's wrong with our world. Skype.
Skype, yeah.
And Skype.
The Skype issue.
They did it again, those guys never test anything.
Every week there's a new version. They take stuff away. Yeah.
Well, here's the joke. It wasn't Skylake. It wasn't Skype. It was the Windows 10 anniversary update the whole time. So that's how that happens. I don't know. I'm embarrassed. I mean, I didn't figure it out.
Is it?
We have our biases and our,
I'm trying to think because there are people that actively mm-hmm. send feedback to Microsoft. And there are people within Microsoft that are doing these tests. So is it that it's just not part of enough people's workflow?
You know what? I think I can't speak for everybody. I mean, I think a lot of people maybe succumb to the same line of thinking I went down. I think, if you look back at the original point of them killing support for this very popular codec, they were literally trying to solve a problem. You know, it's like, hey, I've got really bad tinnitus, so I'm going to grab a knife and cut my ear off. It's like it doesn't really solve the problem,
Well,
and
you're absolutely right. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I think a lot of us fall into this thing. From Microsoft's perspective, it's very easy to get lulled by the fact that they have racks and racks of computers of different configurations, running every build, running all these automated tests. They catch so much stuff. They get all this telemetry back from the millions of people in the Insider program. And I think you can kind of fall into a trap where you believe that you can kind of just pat yourself on the back. I'm not blaming them. I did the same thing. I mean, you kind of feel good about the system and like, this is going to work. It's going to catch everything everything that would be endemic. But again, it's 2016. It's the third release of Windows 10. It is amazing to me in this day and age that something used by this many people with this obvious of a problem escaped the notice of the people who needed to make a go, no go decision on it. And it just went out into the world and broke things, you know?
Yeah.
And it's something they, it's a very important part of this. I call it a contract, you know, we have with Microsoft. They're forcing us to update the OS all the time. Fine. But they need to ensure that it's the most, reliable possible process that it can be.
And it also seems like they finally took fault and addressed the issue as, oh, wow, it is us, when enterprise users started losing their minds saying, listen, I have clients in 1,000 different locations worldwide. Why can't we chat with them? That's when it happened.
Yeah, yeah, because those are the guys that really matter to Microsoft.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the knee-jerk reaction to that one. But it seems like that's what it took, you know.
You know, I have a friend, he has a software company, and they do some internal beta testing. And they say, like, the internal stuff isn't real-world experience, right? That's not what's happened. That's not how people are using it. So once you release the software and you start getting the complaints, you start addressing what to fix and what not to fix. So if 30 people complained initially for this during the build, the beta, you're going to say, okay, it's lower on the priority list because.
Sure.
And it's
so,
because.
So two things to this, because you're making an excellent point. I'm sorry to interrupt, but in a way, this is what the Insider program was supposed to help correct, that the ratio of problems would be closer to the real world with all these people testing it publicly, right? That if when you have a limited beta, like you said, you'll have like 30 complaints, but that will translate into 3 million real world problems maybe, or 30 million or whatever the number is. The hope is with the Insider program that this isn't as big of a delta. But the other thing is, this speaks to the why of how Windows is rolled out, right? A lot of people have said, they released this thing on August 2nd or 3rd or whatever the date was. And how come I'm not getting it immediately, right? Like, why are they staging it? Like, what's the point? This is the point.
This is exactly why.
This is exactly the point. So, we can kind of complain that they didn't catch this. It's a fair criticism. But I think one thing people need to understand is that this kind of thing is why they don't just, carpet bomb the entire planet. Because you do find out about things like this. And if people have these webcams connected to their camera, to their PCs, maybe those are the ones that shouldn't be getting the anniversary update through Windows Update. Until this problem's fixed.
Yeah.
You know,
he has a good question. Someone says, does Logitech not do internal testing? Right? I mean, that's a great question, right?
Yeah,
Logitech didn't even realize this was happening.
Right.
Skype didn't realize this was happening. I mean, that's a whole different
thing. I can't speak to Logitech. I mean, you may recall, right before I went away probably to Paris, this problem was happening, and I almost broke out. I have like an old Intel RealSense camera.
Yeah,
and I almost broke it out just to have it there. Like, I just want to I just want to make sure I have a camera that works. You know.
Yeah. Well, Microsoft also has cameras on the market. I'm curious if theirs is also broken, the LifeCam Studio and the LifeCam Cinema.
Yeah. So I guess it does. Apparently, this does impact other webcams. But the Logitech C920 is like the classic, right? I mean, I guess this would be horrible if this impacted internal cameras, like in Surface devices or other.
I think it's any device, any camera that's doing the onboard encoding within its own chip and not relying on the CPU.
Interesting.
Okay. Because that makes sense, because it sees it, most likely it thinks it's doubling up on the encoding.
Okay. So that would typically be an external camera, I would imagine.
An external camera or anything that does 1080p. If your camera does 1080p... then it's most likely doing the encoding on its own chip.
I honestly think this is more psychology or psychiatry than it is process. I think
it's always psychiatry.
No, I'm seriously, like, I really, it may not be exactly what I went through, but I think when people have problems with Skype, they blame Skype and they stop thinking about, everything. Oh, I'm running it on the anniversary edition this time. That was the one thing that was different.
Yeah.
You know, they, to them, it's like Windows 7. And, you know, again, this is partially Microsoft's messaging issue, but you have so many problems with Skype, you just blame Skype.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
I blame Skylake.
But this is a great example. And the reason why, you know, people are saying, why are you dedicating so much time to this, most likely? But it has to do with the fact that Windows has taken a very different approach. Microsoft's taken a very different approach with Windows. And with this public beta test, essentially, where a ton of people are using it, things are still slipping through. And this may be a awakening for Microsoft to say, oh, wait a minute. We got to figure this out.
Right.
It's not all about the insider program and finding it. Things are going to slip. And what if it's a major thing?
Yeah.
You know, new chipsets come out. I mean, it's...
Yep. Yep. I don't know what to say. All I can do is I've already said everything I need to say. But I mean, when I think back to the way that I responded to this problem, it seems to me that it wasn't completely irrational, that others might have done something similar. And it's still amazing. I mean, look, if there's a problem with Skype in the anniversary update, you have to fix it. Yeah. Right? It doesn't matter where the fault lies. So in some ways it is, of course, inexcusable, but hopefully this will be a learning moment for everybody.
Yeah.
This doesn't happen.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Yeah.
Guys, I want to take a moment and talk about our sponsor, and that's Harry's. Paul, I got really jealous that you got this new razor.
Okay. I've been using it.
I sent Harry's an email, and I said, hey, what's the deal here?
Right.
Why did Paul get one and I didn't? And they immediately sent one over, I mean, literally like the next day. And I have to tell you, this thing is pretty cool. I just got it today. So for people who want to see what this is, actually, I could do this. Here we go. Look at that. So here, this is their new handle. And I'm losing my voice while I do this.
The new handle.
Yeah, look, it's a rubber grip handle.
Yeah.
This is the new Harry's razor here.
How is it?
I have yet to use it to shave.
I mean, how does it feel?
It feels great, actually. It's...
I just like the... I have the... You know, it's kind of like an army green... I don't even know what series it is. Winston or something.
You know what's awesome about it? It's really, I mean, the craftsmanship on these things are really good, and they sent like a bunch of blades, and they sent, you know, the cream and everything, and extra ones, which is really awesome. But the fact, like, I don't shave that often. You know, I just clean up.
Later, I could squeeze out a beard right now if I strain my face hard enough.
See, I don't shave that often. So for me, I was using these cheapo disposables, and they were fine until I started realizing, I'm like, they're getting way cheaper than they used to be. So when Harry's, you know, came on board and they started sending me these razors, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try them out. And it was night and day. These things last forever on top of it. It's just $2 a blade if you do the math compared to, you know, $4 a blade if you're buying these, you know, multiple blade razors. They're high quality blades. And this is there's a trimmer blade now. That's the cool thing. So it's for, you know, just like to clean up and go around because everybody has a beard now. Nobody, you know, that's what's in. I'm really, really impressed by the quality of their product and their support and the company itself. They have a great promotion for you guys. If you go to harrys.com right now, you get $5 off your first purchase when you enter the code WhatTheTech at checkout. Harrys.com, get $5 off. And this is a great gift, I mean, for anybody. Seriously, you know, I have one. I gave one to my dad. You have one, Paul. Have you bought somebody a Harry's razor yet?
No, actually, I haven't. But I mean, I use it every day. Yeah. I really like it.
Great company, great people. Try it out. Get someone a gift. Harrys.com. My voice is gone. Harrys.com. Use the offer code WhatTheTech at checkout and get $5 off. Great people. Also, here's what they do. The Harry's 5-blade razor includes the flex hinge, the trimmer blade, the lubricating strip, and the textured handle. So, because I shave in the shower, so this is perfect. I'm not going to have a razor flying all over the place. Quality is always 100% guaranteed. If you don't love your shave, Harry's will refund your money back fully. Harrys.com. Use the code WhatTheTech at checkout. I love these guys, actually. I'm so glad they sent me the new one. Perfect. Paul.
Yes.
So, do you want to talk about this product now? This this tablet I have here?
Sure.
So,
this iPad that you have
iPad
right now?
That I have here. So, about a month and a half ago, I was sent the TechLast 9.8 Plus 2. So, I opened this thing up, and, you know, I was a little iffy initially. It's both Android and Windows 10. You know, it's very inexpensive compared to what else is on the market. So, if you're comparing this to an iPad, you are spending way less, and you're getting a lot more in the sense of, you know, specs, those bonuses, those extras. So I said, you know what, let me use this long term. It's very difficult to do a full-fledged review when you get something like this in a matter of a week. So I like to take my time, and I actually like to use the product. So I'll give you the specs on this, and you tell me what you think, Paul. So it does Windows. It's a 9.7-inch display. It's the same display as the iPad Air and the iPad Air 2. Same exact display. It's, what is it, 2048 by 1536.
36, yeah.
It's a Retina display. It has Intel Cherry Trail Z8300? Yeah, Z8300. It's a 64-bit quad-core processor, 1.4 gigahertz. It has 4 gigs of RAM. So the specs sound great. And I would say that is not enough for you to determine if this is what you want. But what is really cool is that you have Windows 10 and Android on it. Also, you have expandable memory, and you have micro HDMI and micro USB and all the stuff. So started using it. It's pretty cool. And then I realized it's actually really good because the battery, I was shocked to see the battery life. I initially, when I wrote this review, I said, you know, the battery life's probably not going to be that great. Very good battery life for what it is. I think it's an 8,000 milliamp battery. It's not that big, but it performs really good in Windows compared to Android, which is kind of surprising, right?
Yeah. Yeah, actually.
You would imagine that Android would handle battery life better, but Windows does a better job at this. Let me see if I can pull this down. So I'm in Android right now, and it has, I mean, it's typical Android stuff. You could, you know, install your apps and everything. So this is how you switch. It's kind of funky how it's done, but this is how you switch to Windows. So you see, I don't know if you can see it, but it has like these Chinese characters.
Yeah.
And it says Windows. So
and then you can, so there's no way to make that another language?
No. So it's their own software that is like kind of like the switcher, the reset. And you go through it. The boot up takes a little bit of time, but you have a full-fledged Windows 10 machine here. I hooked it up to my Bluetooth because I have an adapter to go from the micro USB to the main USB. And I hooked it up to my keyboard and mouse, and I was just clicking around like using Windows, and it was perfectly fine. The price of this device is the major selling point. You're under $200. I think it's $170.
That's amazing.
So for $170, oh, here we go. So I wiped this out afterwards. So. Here we go. Here we're in Windows now. It's the touch display is perfectly fine. I mean, it works great. Here's the interesting thing that I noticed. Okay, so I don't use the Edge browser. I use a normal person, I use Chrome. I had difficulty watching, you know, higher quality video.
Yeah.
In Edge, I was able to watch 4K video on this thing.
Wow.
So it's the CPU is fine. It's great. I'm very surprised by it. I was not anticipating this positive of a review for a tablet under $200 that has both Android and Windows 10 on it. So,
but yeah, how did you get this thing?
It was sent to me. They wanted me to review it. And I said,
so how would somebody get it?
So if you search, there's a website here. I think it's called, let me do this, TechLast, so I could give you guys the proper website. So it's sold, I believe they have some on Amazon, but there's a website called gearbest.com, and it's a lot of these, you know, unknown name companies. You know, like they have some name brand stuff, but it's a lot of these Chinese tablets, and it's a lot of these laptops that you may not be aware of. They have some funky stuff on there also, but that's the main place that this is sold. And it goes for about $170, which is not bad at all.
That's crazy.
Yeah, $170, you're getting a full-fledged machine here. I can't think of another product, another tablet that you could get, you know, more bang for your buck. Now, there are a couple cons with anything, but the cons are the battery life in Android wasn't as good as it was in Windows. And the Android, because I ran it through some benchmarking, it uses more CPU for whatever reason. I don't know if that's an Intel issue. I'm guessing it's an Intel problem, right? Because Android really doesn't work too much with Intel. So,
yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, it's not very common, but it should be fully supported. I mean,
yeah. So a couple other things, like there's a firmware update on the Android side, and there's a firmware update on the Android side, and it doesn't seem to work. Doesn't seem to install. The OTA OTA update fails on that side, and the Wi-Fi. I had some issues with the Wi-Fi, but on the Windows side, it was better, surprisingly. So it seemed, and if that's what you're buying, I mean, if you want a full fledged computer, you got a full fledged computer. It's also available on Amazon, so if you guys want it, it's there. I was very surprised at the quality. Now, you are getting, you know, if you're paying under $200, $170, and that's all you want to spend, I think it's great. If you compare it to an iPad, I'm not really going to compare it to an iPad or a Surface. Somebody asked me last week, how does this compare to a Surface? Yeah. I said, you can't really compare it to a Surface, because a Surface is what, like $500, $600 if you compare it?
More.
You know, more. I mean, more, yeah. The other thing I liked was the expandable memory, up to 128 gigs. You could put in an SD. Micro SD in here. So I have to tell you, if you are in the market for a lower end tablet, you might want to consider this. That's my review of this device. People were, I was very concerned at the how good this thing was going to be, and very surprised. The cameras are not so great on it, but that's with, you know, the $170 tablet. It's not going to be the best camera in the world. So, Paul, would you, you know, here's the thing. I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Who do you think a device like this would be good for?
You know, it's like any dual booting situation. It's, you know, for people who are kind of on the fence, I don't think there's a big compelling case for pure tablets running Windows 10. But it's basically an Android tablet, and you do have that ability to go into Windows 10 and get that stuff if you want it. Yeah. So there's certainly benefit to it. It's just a question of, you know, how much utility. I mean, it makes more sense than a pure Windows tablet.
Yeah. I'm trying to see who, listen, if you have a budget and you want a tablet, you have Android and Windows, right? Because you could install the old stuff on there and old and new stuff on there from Android and, you know, from Windows if whatever's on, you know, with the applications. But I don't know if there is a need to have a dual boot, you know, concept. I don't know how well that works. Listen, it's a perk, right? That you could do Windows and that on there. But I found it interesting. If you want to install Anniversary Update, it's a little out there. You can't just do it. You got to put in a USB and do it via USB stick.
Yeah.
And I'm holding off on it. There are forums. There are a couple websites out there that kind of review these type of tablets that are on the market, and they create their own ROMs and they tell you how to install, you know, stuff you want. So if that's what you want to do, there's plenty of resources out there, and there's a lot of people that are using it. So I don't know. I thought it was cool. I thought it was an interesting device.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the coolest things about it is, a lot of people who are on kind of the Windows or I guess the Android side of the fence as well, as much as they may or may not like Apple or whatever, I mean, it's like you got to like that kind of industrial style that they have. And this is a nice opportunity to have that But with the OS you prefer.
With the OS you prefer, yeah. And there's a whole bunch of them. I mean, the box that you were talking about, that little PC, right? Last week we were discussing.
Yeah, the Wintel,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, but that's the same thing, right? It's a very inexpensive Chinese company that's on the market right now. I got a lot of emails about that kind of device, and a lot of people were saying that they would use it as a Roku. I was more surprised that people wanted to do that, that they wanted to use it as, you know, like a media player in their living room rather than use it as a computer.
Yep.
Very interesting. Yeah. Paul, talking about Android. 7 is out.
I heard that.
Yeah. Does anybody have it?
Yes, I do.
You do?
If you have a Nexus device,
yeah,
so a modern one, yeah,
what do you
absolutely.
Think of it?
It's great. I mean, it's sort of like iOS in the sense that the big stuff happened a couple of releases ago, and now they're fine-tuning it. And so I think in the case of Android, you know, you and I both have had sort of something between ambivalence and outright hatred of Android, depending on the version. And over the past couple of versions, it's actually gotten pretty good. And so I think Android M in particular was just a nice refined release. And this one, they're refining on top of that again. And so you get a bunch of nice multitasking improvements. You get improvements to features that debuted in Android M, like the Doze feature, which saves battery life. And now it will actually put everything into a low power mode on compatible phones when you put the device in your pocket. So it can sense that you're moving around but not using it. It actually, you know, shuts down a little harder. And I think, you know, stuff like that's cool. So I guess the big deal, though, is for most people, it's not like a huge release, but that's nice because they've kind of gotten some things right. They're refining it. And so whenever you do get the upgrade, if you have a Nexus device, which will be immediately, if you have some other device, it may be in the future or never. You know, you might just get it through a new device purchase. So.
So a couple of the big features here is the mm-hmm. The split view, the multi-window view.
Yeah, yeah.
I have that on my Samsung, but that's not built into Android.
That's right. That's a Samsung feature.
That's the cooked ROM that they're doing that included that. Now it's involved. You know, now it's in.
It works. Well, I shouldn't say it works, but it's the way they're handling this kind of multi-app view is very similar to what Apple's doing with iOS. If that makes sense. The only big difference is that they don't support picture-in-picture on handsets and tablets for some reason. You can only use that on like an Android TV device, which no one has. So
was there anything that stood out to you other than like with the phone itself, like with this version, did you find it to be a little crisper, a little, you know?
No, I think that, like I said, the big stuff happened in M, and so this is just more of a refinement. I mean, there's some nice changes like to quick settings and notifications, which are kind of noticeable. Once you figure out the multitasking stuff, It's really nice, but it's not like a, you know, it's not an amazing, you know, new experience. But for example, one of the things that once you figure it out and use it, you just can never go back is the ability to switch instantly back and forth between two apps. And so in other words, you run, I don't, you know, whatever those two apps might be, you're reading a web page and you're taking notes, or you're, you know, listening to music and you're doing something else. You just double tap on the square button in the Android toolbar, which is, I think, called Overview. And when you double tap it now, it switches between the last two apps. And that's kind of cool because, well, first of all, it's really fast. And so that's really neat.
You tap and boom, boom, and it goes to that one. And then
tap, and you just go back and forth. It's like Alt-Tab.
Yeah.
But the neat thing about it is some of the new multitasking features in Android N or Android 7 don't work with certain apps. And so, for example, like I found out the Instagram app does not support split view at all. It doesn't support any of that multitasking stuff. So there's no way to have Instagram on the screen side by side with another app, but it does. It's every app works with this quick switching thing I was talking about. So you can quick switch between Instagram and any other app. And so that works with everything. So it's kind of a nice fallback as well.
I do find it interesting, like the Doze feature. Mm-hmm. That is something that will probably be the most useful for people.
Yeah.
Because the battery, you know, the problem is with these devices, there's only so much battery technology that's available to put into the consumer's hands that's affordable. So the trick will now be slowing down the software a little bit and figuring out how to manipulate the software.
Yeah, and it's kind of a it's a nice gift, you know, if you already have a device and it works, and so you get this little improvement, and it's nice, but it's one of those goofy things too where it's kind of hard to call it out, you know. Some people will say, oh, you know, the Android 7 has made my Nexus 9 usable or something. That's not been my experience at all. But
is that what they were saying? Are people?
Yeah, because, well, the Nexus 9 was garbage. It's such a terrible tablet. But the performance was always, always terrible. And it's sort of like the Xbox One updates. It's a little less bad, but it's still, yeah, you know, not where it should be.
If we're on the topic of battery life, I had a big problem for like a month, and I couldn't figure out what the problem was. Verizon did something to their cloud software. You know, it's like their Verizon cloud update. So it it puts your stuff on the cloud. Their cloud servers. So like an idiot, I had enabled it for my contacts and my contacts only. I didn't want to upload my photos and documents and stuff like that. So all of a sudden, I mean, just one day, my battery, if I left the house with, and my phone is hot, it was just running super hot. For like a couple of weeks, it was just getting worse and worse and worse. And finally, I said, you know, let me figure out what this is. I looked at my battery consumption, and 65% of my battery is being used by Verizon Cloud. And I look at the the activity.
Verizon Cloud?
Yeah, Verizon Cloud. That's a cloud backup software.
God.
It would not, and you can't uninstall it, by the way. You could only disable it.
Right.
And whatever the update did, it kept it on always in the background.
Right.
And it was killing my battery, killing it. And I stumbled on this because my friend has the same exact problem on his Android phone through Verizon, where his battery is something is draining it constantly. And it's this application. So if you have it, turn it off. I used it once.
Just as a general rule, if you have anything with the word Verizon in the app title, turn it off. Yeah. Turn it off.
You know what? I do use Verizon Messenger because you can install it on Windows and on the Mac. So I get all my text messages through the Verizon app on my computer. That's the only reason. And you don't have to have your phone on. It just.
I know. For AT&T, the only thing I don't delete is the My Wireless or My ATT. It's the thing where you go to look at your usage and all that stuff, but all their stupid utilities and family this and navigation, and I just get rid of all that stuff.
I love the fact that Verizon has a navigation that you pay like $20 a month for on an Android on a phone. They have Verizon Navigator, whatever they call it, and it's like $20. It's insane.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, there's another thing here. Sony to announce two new PlayStation 4 consoles.
Yeah.
You posted this yesterday on Therat.com.
Basically, the Wall Street Journal confirming things we'd heard months ago. Yeah. If you go back and look at the chronology of this, these rumors had come up about Sony coming out with two new PlayStation 4 consoles, setting off this fiery debate about why this was not okay to do and how this has never happened, and you don't update consoles midstream, and the whole point of the console value proposition is that it's a steady hardware platform that you can count on over the course of X number of years. And I sort of read that stuff and I was like, no, absolutely not. And in fact, Microsoft needs to do this right now. So since then, what happened was Sony confirmed, I didn't say two, but before E3, they said, yeah, look, we're working on a new version of the PS4. We're not going to announce it at E3. We'll talk about it later in the year. And then Microsoft, I met them before the show, but they announced at E3 that, sure enough, they're doing exactly what Sony was rumored to be doing, which is coming up with new versions of the console. One would basically be the existing console in a new lower cost form factor, as the Xbox One S, which as it turns out has a few additional features, 4K video support and HDR support for games and video, which, by the way, I'm now testing on this unbelievable 4K HDR display in my office.
Oh, what do you have?
It's a Samsung something. It's incredible. 55-inch monstrosity. Anyway, and then they're coming out with the Project Scorpio, which will do 4K gaming and VR as well.
Yeah.
Same debate, you know, they're screwing it up, they're ruining it, they ruined it, you know. No, this is like win-win. There's no losing to this. This is the exact right approach. But now that Sony's are going to announce it, we're going to go through the same thing again, and they're going to do the same thing. They're going to come out with a cost-reduced version, a slim version, which is what the S in, you know, Xbox 360 S and Xbox One S stands for, slim. And they're going to come out with a higher end version. In Sony's case, they're not really touting it for VR per se, because the existing PS4 is VR, but yeah, it will no doubt achieve higher resolutions and support 4K. So, you know, exactly the same strategy. Smart.
I think they're, and it looks to be much smaller than the Xbox.
Well, let's see. You know, the existing PS4 is probably a bit smaller overall than the Xbox One S, although I think they're comparable. So it's fair to say if this thing is slimmer than the existing PS4, it probably will be smaller. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they're close enough. It doesn't really matter. You know, when you look at the original Xbox One, it was way too big. And so they've solved this problem very nicely. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So the possible announcement will be September 7th. Sony's planned announcement will be September 7th in New York, same day as the Apple event.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll have two things to talk about that day.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Great. I got to watch
two both companies are essentially just releasing new versions of something they already sell. The world goes mad.
I know. But by the way, if you are a Throp Premium subscriber, which you should be.
Damn right you should be.
You wrote an article about the iPhone meh.
Well, yeah, I mean, and this is, it wasn't misconstrued by as many people as I thought it might be, but Apple is in the same position as Microsoft was when Windows controlled the personal computing industry. It was kind of hard to get a user base excited about something that's essentially just a lipstick on the pig version of the thing you're already selling, you know. And it's hard when you kind of reach an apex, because the only place you have to go from there is down.
Yeah.
And Apple, you know, it's a different world, you know, than it was, say, 15 years ago. Different markets, different concerns. You know, Apple was able to grow by adding additional countries, you know, like China, especially over time. But they've done basically what Microsoft did. You know, Microsoft also released a bunch of Me Too products that kind of aped the original success and never really had the same level of success. You know, Apple did the same thing. And now they're in a position where this every other year thing, where they release a major release then a minor release, isn't really working out. And, you know, they've padded it out a little bit. You know, a couple of years ago, they introduced like two phones at the same time. This past year, they released a third. And now this year, they're just going to do minor updates again. They're not going to do a major release this year. And, you know, you could make the argument what they should be calling these things are like iPhone 6 SE and iPhone 6 SE Plus. And they probably won't, because that sounds too crappy. But let's be honest, like that's what these things are. And if there is a major release coming, it won't be till next year, you know, with an iPhone, eight, whatever they call it, whatever, 8 yeah. or 10 but I, or you whatever.
Know what, we go back to this example a lot, but we're kind of out of that, oh my God, moment. What is this device moment? Because we've already gotten a lot of it. Now we're in just in this maturity phase for these devices. We're not going to see this, you know, and it's not going to happen. We're not going to see this, you know, clear iPhone that bends and it becomes a watch and, it, you know,
yeah,
you can strap it on your back and fly away like the Rocketeer. It's not happening this year or next year, maybe in 5 years. I think it's interesting. So the article I really liked, and you were talking about, you know, Samsung's strategy and, and how where we are right now. Netflix had to do this, right? Netflix had to go. Their U.S. numbers kind of got stale, and they opened up Netflix to all these other markets. And then they
And by the way, there's very interesting side effects to that kind of stuff. If you're an international traveler, in the case of Netflix, it's been very interesting for us, because over the years, as we went out in during the summer, we used to have to use these VPN services to access Netflix, which was a U.S. service in Europe. And now you can go out there and they have a French version of it, and it's the English shows are in English. And so it's not 100% the same, but it's close enough to the same that for my kids in particular, when they want to watch TV and relax at night, they can put Netflix on just like they do at home. And it kind of makes the world a smaller place in a way. You know, it just kind of works.
Netflix uniting the world one stream at a time.
Yep. Yeah.
Guys, go to our website, gfqnetwork.com. We're approaching the end of this episode, but stay tuned. We're going to do our bonus show. If you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to... Paul, do you have a pick this week, a throwback? We haven't done a throwback in a while. Think about it. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. You can subscribe to us. We're everywhere podcasts are available. You can watch it on therot.com as well. If you like what we do, fund us. Go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You can tip us there. Paul has an awesome, awesome feature on his website, and it's called The Rot Premium. I'm actually logged in here. I got to log out at The Rot Premium, my The Rot account, so I could actually see the thing come up. $42, Paul, for the year.
Mm-hmm.
You could sign up, get all these bonus stuff. You and Brad are going to be doing a weekly podcast. You are posting articles. You're doing a lot of stuff on therot.com for the premium service. I'm a Therot Premium member, and so should you be one. There you go.
Yes.
I heard like a tick in my ear, and I was like, is he trying to say something? No.
No, sorry.
I follow Paul on Twitter, at Therot. You can follow me at Andrew Zarian. Is there anything coming up, Paul?
No, nothing major.
Okay.
I mean, I'll be in Las Vegas at the end of October. I'm going to Amsterdam and Harlem in the Netherlands in, I think it's mid to late November, actually, like right past the middle of the month. That's about it that I know of. I mean, I'm sure there'll be more, right? There'll be some kind of Microsoft hardware event in the fall sometime, I would bet. Some Xbox stuff, probably.
Excellent. That's it for this week, guys. I'm losing my voice. See you later.